A surge of darkness shot up into her and through the bond. It made me cringe. My best friend was light-hearted and kind. She didn't have feelings like that. I hate all the gossip. It's so stupid. How can they all be so shallow? Ignore them, I repeated soothingly. You were smart not to hang out with them anymore. Ignoring them grew harder and harder, though. The whispers and looks increased. In animal behavior, it became so bad I couldn't even concentrate on my now favorite subject. Ms. Meissner had started talking about evolution and survival of the fittest, and how animals sought mates with good genes. It fascinated me, but even she had a hard time staying on task, since she had to keep yelling at people to quiet down and pay attention. Something's going on, I told Lissa between classes. I don't know what, but they're all over something new. Something else? Other than the queen hating me? What more could there be? I wish I knew. Things finally came to a head in our last class of the day, Slavic art. It started when a guy I barely knew made a very explicit and nearly obscene suggestion to me while we all worked on individual projects. I replied in kind, letting him know exactly what he could do with his request. He only laughed.
Come on, Rose, I bleed for you.
Loud giggles ensued, and Mia cut us a taunting look.
Wait, it's Rose who does the bleeding, right?
More laughter. Understanding slapped me in the face. I jerked Lissa away.
They know.
Know what?
About us. About how you...
You know.
How I fed you while we were gone. She gaped.
How?
How do you think?
Your friend, Christian?
No,
she said adamantly.
He wouldn't have.
Who else knew? Faith in Christian flashed in her eyes and in our bond. But she didn't know what I knew. She didn't know how I'd bitched him out last night, how I'd made him think she hated him. The guy was unstable. Spreading our biggest secret, well, one of them, would be an adequate revenge. Maybe he'd killed the rabbit, too. After all, it had died only a couple of hours after I'd told him off. Not waiting around to hear her protests, I stalked off to the other side of the room, where Christian was working by himself, as usual. Lissa followed in my wake, not caring if people saw us. I leaned across the table toward him, putting my face inches from his.
I'm going to kill you.
His eyes darted to Lissa, the faintest glimmer of longing in them, and then a scowl spread over his face.
Why? Is it like guardian extra credit?
Stop with the attitude, I warned, pitching my voice low.
You told. You told how Lissa had to feed off me.
Tell her, said Lissa desperately. Tell her she's wrong.
Christian dragged his eyes from me to her, and as they regarded each other, I felt such a powerful wave of attraction, it was a wonder it didn't knock me over. Her heart was in her eyes. It was obvious to me that he felt the same way about her, but she couldn't see it, particularly since he was still glaring at her.
You can stop it, you know, he said. You don't have to pretend anymore.
Lissa's giddy attraction vanished, replaced by hurt and shock over his tone.
I... What? Pretend what?
You know what. Just stop. Stop with the act.
Lissa stared at him, her eyes wide and wounded. She had no clue I'd gone off on him last night. She had no clue that he believed she hated him. Get over feeling sorry for yourself and tell us what's going on, I snapped at him.
Did you or didn't you tell them?
He fixed me with a defiant look.
No, I didn't.
I don't believe you.
I do, said Lissa.
I know. It's impossible to believe a freak like me could keep his mouth shut, especially since neither of you can. But I have better things to do than spread stupid rumors. You want someone to blame? Blame your golden boy over there.
I followed his gaze to where Jesse was laughing about something with that idiot Ralph.
Jesse doesn't know, said Lissa defiantly.
Christian's eyes were glued to me.
He does, though.
Doesn't he, Rose? He knows. My stomach sank out of me. Yes, Jesse did know. He'd figured it out that night in the lounge. I didn't think he'd tell. He was too afraid of Dimitri.
You told him? Exclaimed Lissa.
No, he guessed. I was starting to feel sick.
He apparently did more than guess, muttered Christian.
I turned on him. What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, you don't know.
I swear to God, Christian, I'm going to break your neck after class.
Man, you really are unstable.
He said it almost happily, but his next words were more serious. He still wore that sneer, still glowed with anger, but when he spoke, I could hear the faintest uneasiness in his voice.
He sort of elaborated on what was in your note, got into a little more detail.
Oh, I get it. He said we had sex. I didn't need to mince words. Christian nodded, so Jesse was trying to boost his own reputation. Okay, that I could deal with. Not like my reputation was that stellar to begin with. Everyone already believed I had sex all the time.
And, Ralph, too, that you and he.
Ralph? No amount of alcohol or any illegal substance would make me touch him. What? That I had sex with Ralph, too? Christian nodded. That asshole, I'm going to...
There's more.
How? Did I sleep with the basketball team?
He said... They both said you let them... Well, you let them drink your blood.
That stopped even me. Drinking blood during sex. The dirtiest of the dirty. Sleazy. Beyond being easy or a slut. A gazillion times worse than Lissa drinking from me for survival. Blood whore territory.
That's crazy, Lissa cried. Rose would never... Rose?
But I wasn't listening anymore. I was in my own world. A world that took me across the classroom to where Jesse and Ralph sat. They both looked up, faces half smug and half... nervous, if I had to guess. Not unexpected, since they were both lying through their teeth. The entire class came to a standstill. Apparently, they'd been expecting some type of showdown. My unstable reputation in action. What the hell do you think you're doing? I asked in a low, dangerous voice. Jesse's nervous look turned to one of terror. He might have been taller than me, but we both knew who would win if I turned violent. Ralph, however, gave me a cocky smile.
We didn't do anything you didn't want us to do.
His smile turned cruel.
And don't even think about laying a hand on us. You start a fight, and Kirova'll kick you out to go live with the other blood whores.
The rest of the students were holding their breaths, waiting to see what we'd do. I don't know how Mr. Nagy could have been oblivious to the drama occurring in his class. I wanted to punch both of them, hit them so hard that it'd make Dimitri's brawl with Jesse look like a pat on the back. I wanted to wipe that smirk off Ralph's face. But, asshole or not, he was right. If I touched them, Kirova would expel me in the blink of an eye. And if I got kicked out, Lissa would be alone. Taking a deep breath, I made one of the hardest decisions of my life. I walked away. The rest of the day was miserable. In backing down from the fight, I opened myself up to mockery from everyone else. The rumors and whispers grew louder. People stared at me openly. People laughed. Lissa kept trying to talk to me, to console me, but I ignored even her. I went through the rest of my classes like a zombie, and then I headed off to practice with Dimitri as fast as I could. He gave me a puzzled look but didn't ask any questions. Alone in my room later on, I cried for the first time in years. Once I got that out of my system, I was about to put on my pajamas when I heard a knock at my door. Dimitri. He studied my face and then glanced away, obviously aware I'd been crying. I could tell, too, that the rumors had finally reached him. He knew.
Are you okay?
It doesn't matter if I am, remember? I looked up at him. Is Lissa okay? This'll be hard on her. A funny look crossed his face. I think it astonished him that I'd still be worried about her at a time like this. He beckoned me to follow and led me out to a back stairwell, one that usually stayed locked to students. But it was open tonight, and he gestured me outside.
5 minutes, he warned.
More curious than ever, I stepped outside. Lissa stood there. I should have sensed she was close, but my out-of-control feelings had obscured hers. Without a word, she put her arms around me and held me for several moments. I had to hold back more tears. We broke apart. She looked at me with calm, level eyes.
I'm sorry, she said.
Not your fault. It'll pass. She clearly doubted that. So did I.
It is my fault, she said. She did it to get back at me.
She?
Mia. Jesse and Ralph aren't smart enough to think of something like that on their own. You said it yourself. Jesse was too scared of Dimitri to talk much about what happened. And why wait until now? It happened a while ago. If he'd wanted to spread stuff around, he would have done it back then. Mia's doing this as retaliation for you talking about her parents. I don't know how she managed it, but she's the one who got them to say those things. In my gut, I realized Lissa was right. Jesse and Ralph were the tools. Mia had been the mastermind. Nothing to be done now, I sighed.
Rose?
Forget it, Liss. It's done, okay? She studied me quietly for a few seconds.
I haven't seen you cry in a long time.
I wasn't crying. A feeling of heartache and sympathy beat through to me from the bond.
She can't do this to you, she argued.
I laughed bitterly, half surprised at my own hopelessness. She already did. She said she'd get back at me, that I wouldn't be able to protect you. She did it. When I go back to classes, a sickening feeling settled in my stomach. I thought about the friends and respect I'd managed to eke out, despite our low profile. That would be gone. You couldn't come back from something like this. Not among the Moroi. Once a blood whore, always a blood whore. What made it worse was that some dark, secret part of me did like being bitten.
You shouldn't have to keep protecting me, she said.
I laughed. That's my job. I'm going to be your guardian.
I know, but I meant like this. You shouldn't suffer because of me. You shouldn't always have to look after me. And yet, you always do. You got me out of here. You took care of everything when we were on our own. Even since coming back. You've always been the one who does all the work. Every time I break down, like last night, you're always there. Me, I'm weak. I'm not like you.
I shook my head. That doesn't matter. It's what I do. I don't mind.
Yeah, but look what happened. I'm the one she really has a grudge against, even though I still don't know why. Whatever, it's going to stop. I'm going to protect you from now on.
There was a determination in her expression, a wonderful confidence radiating off of her that reminded me of the Lissa I'd known before the accident. At the same time, I could feel something else in her, something darker, a sense of deeply buried anger. I'd seen this side of her before, too, and I didn't like it. I didn't want her tapping into it. I just wanted her to be safe. Lissa, you can't protect me.
I can, she said fiercely. There's one thing Mia wants more than to destroy you and me. She wants to be accepted. She wants to hang out with the royals and feel like she's one of them. I can take that away from her, she smiled. I can turn them against her.
How?
By telling them.
Her eyes flashed. My mind was moving too slowly tonight. It took me a while to catch on. Liss, no. You can't use compulsion, not around here.
I might as well get some use out of these stupid powers.
The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here. Liss, if you get caught...
Dimitri stuck his head out.
You've got to get back inside, Rose, before someone finds you.
I shot a panicked look at Lissa, but she was already retreating.
I'll take care of everything this time, Rose. Everything.
Chapter 13. The aftermath of Jesse and Ralph's lies was about as horrible as I'd expected. The only way I survived was by putting blinders on, by ignoring everyone and everything. It kept me sane, barely, but I hated it. I felt like crying all the time. I lost my appetite and didn't sleep well. Yet, no matter how bad it got for me, I didn't worry about myself as much as I did Lissa. She stood by her promise to change things. It was slow at first, but gradually I would see a royal or two come up to her at lunch or in class and say hello. She'd turn on a brilliant smile, laughing and talking to them like they were all best friends. At first, I didn't understand how she was pulling it off. She'd told me she would use compulsion to win the other royals over and to turn them against Mia. But I didn't see it happening. It was possible, of course, that she was winning people over without compulsion. After all, she was funny, smart, and nice. Anyone would like her. Something told me she wasn't winning friends the old-fashioned way, and I finally figured it out. She was using compulsion when I wasn't around. I only saw her for a small part of the day, and since she knew I didn't approve, she only worked her power when I was away. After a few days of this secret compulsion, I knew what I needed to do. I had to get back in her head again, by choice. I'd done it before, I could do it again. At least that's what I told myself, sitting and spacing out in Stan's class one day. But it wasn't as easy as I thought it would be, partly because I felt too keyed up to relax and open myself to her thoughts. I also had trouble because I picked a time when she felt relatively calm. She came through the loudest when her emotions were running strong. Still, I tried to do what I'd done before, back when I'd spied on her and Christian. The meditation thing. Slow breathing, eyes closed. Mental focus like that still wasn't easy for me, but at long last I managed the transition, slipping into her head and experiencing the world as hers. She stood in her American Lit class during project work time, but, like most of the students, she wasn't working. She and Camille Conta leaned against a wall on the far side of the room, talking in hushed voices.
"It's gross," said Camille firmly,
a frown crossing her pretty face. She had on a blue skirt made of velvet-like fabric, short enough to show off her long legs and possibly raise eyes about the dress code.
"If you guys were doing it, I'm not surprised she got addicted and did it with Jesse."
"She didn't do it with Jesse," insisted Lissa. "And it's not like we had sex. We just didn't have any feeders, that's all."
Lissa focused her full attention on Camille and smiled.
"It's no big deal. Everyone's overreacting."
Camille looked like she seriously doubted this. And then, the more she stared at Lissa, the more unfocused her eyes became. A blank look fell over her.
"Right?" asked Lissa, voice like silk. "It's not a big deal."
The frown returned. Camille tried to shake the compulsion. The fact that it had even gotten this far was incredible. As Christian had observed, using it on Moroi was unheard of. Camille, although strong-willed, lost the battle.
"Yeah," she said slowly. "It's really not that big of a deal. And Jesse's lying."
She nodded.
"Definitely lying."
A mental strain burned inside of Lissa as she held onto the compulsion. It took a lot of effort, and she wasn't finished.
"What are you guys doing tonight?"
"Carly and I are going to study for Matheson's test in her room."
"Invite me."
Camille thought about it.
"Hey, you want to study with us?"
"Sure," said Lissa, smiling at her.
Camille smiled back. Lissa dropped the compulsion, and a wave of dizziness swept over her. She felt weak. Camille glanced around, momentarily surprised, then shook off the weirdness.
"See you after dinner, then."
"See you,"
murmured Lissa, watching her walk away. When Camille was gone, Lissa reached up to tie her hair up in a ponytail. Her fingers couldn't quite get all the hair through, and suddenly, another pair of hands caught hold and helped her. She spun around and found herself staring into Christian's ice-blue eyes. She jerked away from him.
"Don't do that!" she exclaimed,
shivering at the realization that it had been his fingers touching her. He gave her his lazy, slightly twisted smile and brushed a few pieces of unruly black hair out of his face.
"Are you asking me or ordering me?"
"Shut up!"
She glanced around, both to avoid his eyes and make sure no one saw them together.
"What's the matter? Worried about what your slaves'll think if they see you talking to me?"
"They're my friends," she retorted.
"Oh, right. Of course they are. I mean, from what I saw, Camille would probably do anything for you, right? Friends till the end."
He crossed his arms over his chest, and in spite of her anger, she couldn't help but notice how the silvery gray of his shirt set off his black hair and blue eyes.
"At least she isn't like you. She doesn't pretend to be my friend one day and then ignore me for no reason."
An uncertain look flickered across his features. Tension and anger had built up between them in the last week, ever since I'd yelled at Christian after the royal reception. Believing what I'd told him, Christian had stopped talking to her and had treated her rudely every time she tried to start a conversation. Now, hurt and confused, she'd given up attempts at being nice. The situation just kept getting worse and worse. Looking out through Lissa's eyes, I could see that he still cared about her and still wanted her. His pride had been hurt, however, and he wasn't about to show weakness.
"Yeah," he said in a low, cruel voice. "I thought that was the way all royals were supposed to act. You certainly seem to be doing a good job with it. Or maybe you're just using compulsion on me to make me think you're a two-faced bitch. Maybe you really aren't, but I doubt it."
Lissa flushed at the word compulsion and cast another worried look around, but decided not to give him the satisfaction of arguing any more. She simply gave him one last glare before storming off to join a group of royals huddled over an assignment. Returning to myself, I stared blankly around the classroom, processing what I'd seen. Some tiny, tiny part of me was starting to feel sorry for Christian. It was only a tiny part, though, and very easy to ignore. At the beginning of the next day, I headed out to meet Dimitri. These practices were my favorite part of the day now, partly because of my stupid crush on him, and partly because I didn't have to be around the others. He and I started with running, as usual, and he ran with me, quiet and almost gentle in his instructions, probably worried about causing some sort of breakdown. He knew about the rumors somehow, but he never mentioned them. When we finished, he led me through an offensive exercise where I could use any makeshift weapons I could find to attack him. To my surprise, I managed to land a few blows on him, although they seemed to do me more damage than him. The impacts always made me stagger back, but he never budged. It still didn't stop me from attacking and attacking, fighting with an almost blind rage. I didn't know who I really fought in those moments, Mia or Jesse or Ralph. Maybe all of them. Dimitri finally called a break. We carried the equipment we'd used on the field and returned everything to the supply room. While putting it away, he glanced at me and did a double take.
"Your hands."
He swore in Russian. I could recognize it by now, but he refused to teach me what any of it meant.
"Where are your gloves?"
I looked down at my hands. They'd suffered for weeks, and today had only made them worse. The cold had turned the skin raw and chapped, and some parts were actually bleeding a little. My blisters swelled. "Don't have any. Never needed them in Portland." He swore again and beckoned me to a chair while he retrieved a first aid kit. Wiping away the blood with a wet cloth, he told me gruffly,
"We'll get you some."
I looked down at my destroyed hands as he worked. This is only the start, isn't it?
"Of what?"
"Me. Turning into Alberta. Her and all the other female guardians They're all leathery and stuff. Fighting and training and always being outdoors. They aren't pretty anymore. I paused. This life? It destroys them. Their looks, I mean. He hesitated for a moment and looked up from my hands. Those warm brown eyes surveyed me, and something tightened in my chest. Damn it! I had to stop feeling this way around him.
It won't happen to you. You're too.
He groped for the right word, and I mentally substituted all sorts of possibilities. Goddess-like? Scorchingly sexy? Giving up, he simply said,
It won't happen to you.
He turned his attention back to my hands. Did he think I was pretty? I never doubted the reaction I caused among guys my own age, but with him, I didn't know. The tightening in my chest increased. It happened to my mom. She used to be beautiful. I guess she still is, sort of, but not the way she used to be. Bitterly, I added, Haven't seen her in a while. She could look completely different for all I know.
You don't like your mother,
he observed. You noticed that, huh?
You barely know her.
That's the point. She abandoned me. She left me to be raised by the academy. When he finished cleaning my open wounds, he found a jar of salve and began rubbing it into the rough parts of my skin. I sort of got lost in the feel of his hands massaging mine.
You say that. But what else should she have done? I know you want to be a guardian. I know how much it means to you. Do you think she feels any differently? Do you think she should have quit to raise you when you'd spend most of your life here anyway?
I didn't like having reasonable arguments thrown at me. Are you saying I'm a hypocrite?
I'm just saying maybe you shouldn't be so hard on her. She's a very respected vampire woman. She set you on the path to be the same.
It wouldn't kill her to visit more, I muttered. But I guess you're right, a little. It could have been worse, I suppose. I could have been raised with blood whores. Dimitri looked up.
I was raised in a vampire commune. They aren't as bad as you think.
Oh! I suddenly felt stupid. I didn't mean...
It's all right.
He focused his attention back on my hands. So, did you, like, have family there? Grow up with them? He nodded.
My mother and two sisters. I didn't see them much after I went to school, but we still keep in touch. Mostly, the communities are about family. There's a lot of love there, no matter what stories you've heard.
My bitterness returned, and I glanced down to hide my glare. Dimitri had had a happier family life with his disgraced mother and relatives than I'd had with my respected guardian mother. He most certainly knew his mother better than I knew mine. Yeah, but isn't it weird? Aren't there a lot of Moroi men visiting to, you know? His hands rubbed circles into mine.
Sometimes.
There was something dangerous in his tone, something that told me this was an unwelcome topic. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring up something bad.
Actually, you probably wouldn't think it's bad, he said after almost a minute had passed.
A tight smile formed on his lips.
You don't know your father, do you?
I shook my head. No. All I know is he must have had wicked cool hair. Dimitri glanced up and his eyes swept me.
Yes, he must have.
Returning to my hands, he said carefully,
I knew mine.
I froze. Really? Most Moroi guys don't stay. Well, I mean, some do, but, you know, usually they just...
Well, he liked my mother.
He didn't say liked in a nice way.
And he visited her a lot. He's my sister's father, too. But when he came, well, he didn't treat my mother very well. He did some horrible things.
Like, I hesitated. This was Dimitri's mother we were talking about. I didn't know how far I could go. Blood whore things?
Like beating her up kinds of things,
he replied flatly. He'd finished the bandages but was still holding my hands. I don't even know if he noticed. I certainly did. His were warm and large, with long and graceful fingers. Fingers that might have played the piano in another life. "Oh, God," I said. "How horrible." I tightened my hands in his. He squeezed back. "That's horrible. And she just let it happen?"
"She did."
The corner of his mouth turned up into a sly, sad smile.
"But I didn't."
Excitement surged through me. "Tell me. Tell me you beat the crap out of him." His smile grew.
"I did."
Wow. I hadn't thought Dimitri could be any cooler, but I was wrong. "You beat up your dad. I mean, that's really horrible what happened, but wow. You really are a god." He blinked.
"What?"
"Oh, nothing." Hastily, I tried to change the subject. "How old were you?" He still seemed to be puzzling out the god comment.
13.
Whoa. Definitely a god. "You beat up your dad when you were 13?
"It wasn't that hard. I was stronger than he was, almost as tall. I couldn't let him keep doing that. He had to learn that being royal and moroi doesn't mean you can do anything you want to other people, even blood whores."
I stared. I couldn't believe he'd just said that about his mother. "I'm sorry."
"It's all right."
Pieces clicked into place for me. "That's why you got so upset about Jesse, isn't it? He was another royal trying to take advantage of a vampire girl." Dimitri averted his eyes.
"I got upset over that for a lot of reasons. After all, you were breaking the rules and..."
He didn't finish, but he looked back into my eyes in a way that made warmth build between us. Thinking about Jesse soon darkened my mood, unfortunately. I looked down. "I know you heard what people are saying, that I..."
"I know it's not true,"
he interrupted. His immediate, certain answer surprised me, and I stupidly found myself questioning it. "Yeah, but how do you..."
"Because I know you,"
he replied firmly.
"I know your character. I know you're going to be a great guardian."
His confidence made that warm feeling return. "I'm glad someone does. Everyone else thinks I'm totally irresponsible."
"With the way you worry more about Lyssa than yourself."
He shook his head.
"No. You understand your responsibilities better than guardians twice your age. You'll do what you have to do to succeed."
I thought about that. I don't know if I can do everything I have to do. He did that cool one-eyebrow thing. "I don't want to cut my hair," I explained. He looked puzzled.
"You don't have to cut your hair. It's not required."
"All the other guardian women do. They show off their tattoos." Unexpectedly, he released my hands and leaned forward. Slowly, he reached out and held a lock of my hair, twisting it around one finger thoughtfully. I froze, and for a moment there was nothing going on in the world except him touching my hair. He let my hair go, looking a little surprised and embarrassed at what he'd done.
"Don't cut it,"
he said gruffly. Somehow I remembered how to talk again. "But no one will see my tattoos if I don't." He moved toward the doorway, a small smile playing over his lips.
"Wear it up."
Chapter 14. I continued spying on Lyssa over the next couple of days, feeling mildly guilty each time. She'd always hated it when I did by accident, and now I did it on purpose. Steadily, I watched as she reintegrated herself into the royal power players one by one. She couldn't do group compulsion, but catching one person alone was just as effective, if slower. And really, a lot didn't need to be compelled to start hanging out with her again. Many weren't as shallow as they seemed. They remembered Lyssa and liked her for who she was. They flocked to her. And now, a month and a half after our return to the academy, it was like she'd never left at all. And during this rise to fame, She advocated for me and rallied against Mia and Jesse. One morning, I tuned into her while she was getting ready for breakfast. She'd spent the last 20 minutes blow-drying and straightening her hair, something she hadn't done in a while. Natalie, sitting on the bed in their room, watched the process with curiosity. When Lissa moved on to makeup, Natalie finally spoke up.
"Hey, we're going to watch a movie in Aaron's room after school. You going to come?"
I'd always made jokes about Natalie being boring, but her friend Aaron had the personality of drywall.
"Can't. I'm going to help Camille bleach Carly's hair. You sure spend a lot of time with them now."
"Yeah, I guess."
Lisa dabbed mascara across her lashes, instantly making her eyes look bigger.
"I thought you didn't like them anymore."
"I changed my mind."
"They sure seem to like you a lot now. I mean, not that anyone wouldn't like you, but once you came back and didn't talk to them, they seemed okay ignoring you, too. I heard them talking about you a lot. I guess that's not surprising because they're Mia's friends, too. But isn't it weird how much they like you now? Like, I hear them always waiting to see what you want to do before they make plans and stuff. And a bunch of them are defending Rose now, which is really crazy. Not that I believe any of that stuff about her, but I never would have thought it was possible."
Underneath Natalie's rambling was the seed of suspicion, and Lissa picked up on it. Natalie probably never would have dreamed of compulsion, but Lissa couldn't risk innocent questions turning into something more.
"You know what?" she interrupted. "Maybe I will swing by Aaron's after all. I bet Carly's hair won't take that long."
The offer derailed Natalie's train of thought.
"Really? Oh, wow, that would be great. She was telling me how sad she was that you're not around as much anymore, and I told her..."
On it went. Lissa continued her compulsion and returned to popularity. I watched it all quietly, always worrying, even though her efforts were starting to reduce the stares and gossip about me.
"This is going to backfire," I whispered to her in church one day. "Someone's going to start wondering and asking questions."
"Stop being so melodramatic. Power shifts all the time around here."
"Not like this."
"You don't think my winning personality could do this on its own?"
"Of course I do, but if Christian spotted it right away, then someone else will..."
My words were interrupted when two guys farther down the pew suddenly exploded into snickers. Glancing up, I saw them looking right at me, not even bothering to hide their smirks. Looking away, I tried to ignore them, suddenly hoping the priest would start up soon. But Lissa returned their looks, and a sudden fierceness flashed across her face. She didn't say a word, but their smiles grew smaller under her heavy gaze.
"Tell her you're sorry," she told them, "and make sure she believes it."
A moment later, they practically fell all over themselves apologizing to me and begging for forgiveness. I couldn't believe it. She'd used compulsion in public, in church of all places, and on two people at the same time. They finally exhausted their supply of apologies, but Lissa wasn't finished.
"That's the best you can do?" she snapped.
Their eyes widened in alarm, both terrified that they'd angered her.
"Liss," I said quickly, touching her arm. "It's okay. I accept their apologies."
Her face still radiated disapproval, but she finally nodded. The guys slumped in relief. Yikes! I'd never felt so relieved to have a service start. Through the bond, I felt a sort of dark satisfaction coming from Lissa. It was uncharacteristic for her, and I didn't like it. Needing to distract myself from her troubling behavior, I studied other people as I so often did. Nearby, Christian openly watched Lissa, a troubled look on his face. When he saw me, he scowled and turned away. Dimitri sat in the back as usual, for once not scanning every corner for danger. His attention was turned inward, his expression almost pained. I still didn't know why he came to church. He always seemed to be wrestling with something. In the front, the priest was talking about St. Vladimir again.
"His spirit was strong, and he was truly gifted by God. When he touched them, the crippled walked, and the blind could see. Where he walked, flowers bloomed.
Man, the Moroi needed to get more saints.
Healing cripples and blind people? I'd forgotten all about St. Vladimir. Mason had mentioned Vladimir bringing people back from the dead, and it had reminded me of Lyssa at the time. Then other things had distracted me. I hadn't thought about the saint or his shadow-kissed guardian and their bond in a while. How could I have overlooked this? Ms. Karp, I realized, wasn't the only other Moroi who could heal like Lyssa. Vladimir could, too.
And all the while the masses gathered to him, loving him, eager to follow his teachings and hear him preach the word of God.
Turning, I stared at Lyssa. She gave me a puzzled look.
What?
I didn't get a chance to elaborate. I don't even know if I could have formed the words, because I was whisked back to my prison almost as soon as I stood up at the end of the service. Back in my room, I went online to research St. Vladimir, but turned up nothing useful. Damn it. Mason had skimmed the books in the library and said there was little there. What did that leave me with? I had no way of learning more about that dusty old saint. Or did I? What had Christian said that first day with Lyssa? Over there, we have an old box full of the writings of the blessed and crazy St. Vladimir. The storage room above the chapel. It had the writings. Christian had pointed them out. I needed to look at them, but how? I couldn't ask the priest. How would he react if he found out students were going up there? It had put an end to Christian's lair. But maybe Christian himself could help. It was Sunday, though, and I wouldn't see him until tomorrow afternoon. Even then, I didn't know if I'd get a chance to talk to him alone. While heading out to practice later, I stopped in the dorm's kitchen to grab a granola bar. As I did, I passed a couple of novice guys, Miles and Anthony. Miles whistled when he saw me.
How's it been going, Rose? You getting lonely? Want some company?
Anthony laughed.
I can't bite you, but I can give you something else you want.
I had to pass through the doorway they stood in to get outside. Glaring, I pushed past, but Miles caught me around the waist, his hand sliding down to my butt. Get your hands off my ass before I break your face, I told him, jerking away. In doing so, I only bumped into Anthony.
Come on, Anthony said. I thought you didn't have a problem taking on two guys at the same time.
A new voice spoke up.
If you guys don't walk away right now, I'll take both of you on.
Mason, my hero.
You're so full of it, Ashford, said Miles.
He was the bigger of the two and let me go to square off with Mason. Anthony backed off from me, more interested in whether or not there'd be a fight. There was so much testosterone in the air I felt like I needed a gas mask.
Are you doing her too? Miles asked Mason. You don't want to share?
Say one more word about her and I'll rip your head off.
Why? She's just a cheap blood...
Mason punched him. It didn't rip Miles's head off or even cause anything to break or bleed, but it looked like it hurt. His eyes widened, and he lunged toward Mason. The sound of doors opening in the hall caused everyone to freeze. Novices got in a lot of trouble for fighting.
Probably some guardians coming, Mason grinned. You want them to know you are beating up on a girl?
Miles and Anthony exchanged glances.
Come on, Anthony said. Let's go. We don't have time for this.
Miles reluctantly followed.
I'll find you later, Ashford.
When they were gone, I turned to Mason.
Beat up on a girl?
You're welcome, he said dryly.
I didn't need your help.
Sure, you were doing just fine on your own.
They caught me off guard, that's all. I could have dealt with them eventually.
Look, don't take being pissed off at them out on me.
I just don't like being treated like a girl.
You are a girl, and I was just trying to help.
I looked at him and saw the earnestness on his face. He meant well. No point in being a bitch to him when I had so many other people to hate lately. Well, thanks. Sorry I snapped at you. We talked a little bit, and I managed to get him to spill some more school gossip.
He had noticed Lissa's rise in status, but didn't seem to find it strange. As I talked to him, I noticed the adoring look he always got around me spread across his face. It made me sad to have him feel that way about me. Guilty, even. How hard would it be, I wondered, to go out with him? He was nice, funny, and reasonably good-looking. We got along. Why did I get caught up in so many messes with other guys when I had a perfectly sweet one here who wanted me? Why couldn't I just return his feelings? The answer came to me before I'd even finished asking myself the question. I couldn't be Mason's girlfriend because when I imagined someone holding me and whispering dirty things in my ear, he had a Russian accent. Mason continued watching me admiringly, oblivious to what was going on in my head. And seeing that adoration, I suddenly realized how I could use it to my advantage. Feeling a little guilty, I shifted my conversation to a more flirty style and watched Mason's glow increase. I leaned beside him on the wall so our arms just touched and gave him a lazy smile. You know, I still don't approve of your whole hero thing, but you did scare them. That was almost worth it.
But you don't approve?
I trailed fingers up his arm. No, I mean, it's hot in principle, but not in practice. He laughed.
The hell it isn't.
He caught hold of my hand and gave me a knowing look.
Sometimes you need to be saved. I think you like being saved sometimes and just can't admit it.
And I think you get off on saving people and just can't admit it.
I don't think you know what gets me off. Saving damsels like you is just the honorable thing to do, he declared loftily.
I repressed the urge to smack him over the use of damsels. Then prove it. Do me a favor just because it's the right thing to do.
Sure, he said immediately. Name it.
I need you to get a message to Christian Ozera. His eagerness faltered.
What the? You aren't serious.
Yes, completely.
Rose, I can't talk to him, you know that.
I thought you said you'd help. I thought you said helping damsels is the honorable thing to do.
I don't really see how honor is involved here.
I gave him the most smoldering look I could manage. He caved.
What do you want me to tell him?
Tell him I need St. Vladimir's books, the ones in storage. He needs to sneak them to me soon. Tell him it's for Lissa, and tell him I lied the night of the reception. I hesitated. Tell him I'm sorry.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't have to. Just do it, please. I turned on the beauty queen smile again. With hasty assurances that he'd see what he could do, he left for lunch, and I went off to practice. Chapter 15. Mason delivered. He found me the next day before school. He was carrying a box of books.
I got them, he said. Hurry and take them before you get in trouble for talking to me.
He handed them over and I grunted. They were heavy. Christian gave you these?
Yeah. Managed to talk to him without anyone noticing. He's kind of got an attitude. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, I noticed. I rewarded Mason with a smile that he ate up. Thanks, this means a lot. I hauled the loot up to my room, fully aware of how weird it was that someone who hated to study as much as I did was about to get buried in dusty crap from the 14th century. When I opened the first book, though, I saw that these must be reprints of reprints of reprints, probably, because anything that old would have long since fallen apart. Sifting through the books, I discovered they fell into three categories. Books written by people after St. Vladimir had died, books written by other people when he was still alive, and one diary of sorts written by him. What had Mason said about primary and secondary sources? Those last two groups were the ones I wanted. Whoever had reprinted these had reworded the books enough so that I didn't have to read Ye Old English or anything. Or rather, Russian, I supposed. St. Vladimir had lived in the old country. Today I healed the mother of Sava, who has long since suffered from sharp pains within her stomach. Her malady is now gone, but God has not allowed me to do such a thing lightly. I am weak and dizzy, and the madness is trying to leak into my head. I thank God every day for shadow-kissed Anna, for without her, I would surely not be able to endure. Anna again. And shadow-kissed. He talked about her a lot, among other things. Most of the time, he wrote long sermons just like what I'd hear in church. Super boring. But other times, the book read just like a diary, recapping what he did each day. And if it really wasn't just a load of crap, he healed all the time. Sick people, injured people, even plants. He brought dead crops back to life when people were starving. Sometimes he would make flowers bloom just for the hell of it. Reading on, I found out that it was a good thing old Vlad had Anna around, because he was pretty messed up. The more he used his powers, the more they started to get to him. He'd get irrationally angry and sad. He'd blame it on demons and stupid stuff like that. But it was obvious he suffered from depression. Once, he admitted in his diary, he tried to kill himself. Anna stopped him. Later, browsing through the book written by the guy who knew Vladimir, I read, "And many think it's miraculous, too, the power the blessed Vladimir shows over others. Moroi and Dampires flock to him and listen to his words, happy just to be near him. Some say it is madness that touches him and not spirit. But most adore him and would do anything he asked. Such is the way God marks his favorites. And if such moments are followed by hallucinations and despair, it is a small sacrifice for the amount of good and leadership he can show among the people." It sounded a lot like what the priest had said, but I sensed more than just a winning personality. People adored him, would do anything he asked. Yes, Vladimir had used compulsion on his followers, I was certain. A lot of Moroi had in those days, before it was banned. But they didn't use it on Moroi, or Dampires. They couldn't. Only Lissa could. I shut the book and leaned back against my bed. Vladimir healed plants and animals. He could use compulsion on a massive scale. And by all accounts, using those sorts of powers made him crazy and depressed. Adding into it all, making it that much weirder, was that everyone kept describing his guardian as shadow-kissed. That expression had bugged me ever since I first heard it.
"You're shadow-kissed. You have to take care of her."
Ms. Karp had shouted those words at me, her hands clenching my shirt and jerking me toward her. It had happened on a night 2 years ago when I'd been inside the main part of the upper school to return a book. It was nearly past curfew, and the halls were empty. I'd heard a loud commotion, and then Ms. Karp had come tearing around the corner, looking frantic and wild-eyed. She shoved me into a wall, still gripping me.
"Do you understand?"
I knew enough self-defense that I could have probably pushed her away, but my shock kept me frozen. "No."
"They're coming for me. They'll come for her."
"Who?"
"Lissa."
"You have to protect her. The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here."
What do you mean? Get her out of... You mean the academy?
"Yes. You have to leave. You're bound. It's up to you. Take her away from this place."
Her words were crazy. No one left the academy. Yet, as she held me there and stared into my eyes, I began to feel strange. A fuzzy feeling clouded my mind. What she said suddenly sounded very reasonable, like the most reasonable thing in the world. Yes, I needed to take Lissa away. Take her... Feet pounded in the hallway, and a group of guardians rounded the corner. I didn't recognize them. They weren't from the school. They pried her off of me, restraining her wild thrashing. Someone asked me if I was okay, but I could only keep staring at Miss Karp.
"Don't let her use the power," she screamed. "Save her! Save her from herself!"
The guardians had later explained to me that she wasn't well and had been taken to a place where she could recover. She would be safe and cared for, they assured me. She would recover. Only she hadn't. Back in the present, I stared at the books and tried to put it all together. Lissa, Ms. Karp, St. Vladimir. What was I supposed to do? Someone rapped at my door, and I jerked out of my memories. No one had visited me, not even staff, since my suspension. When I opened the door, I saw Mason in the hall. "Twice in one day?" I asked. "And how'd you even get up here?" He flashed his easy smile. "Someone put a lit match in one of the bathroom's garbage cans. Damn shame. The staff's kind of busy. Come on, I'm springing you." I shook my head. Setting fires was apparently a new sign of affection. Christian had done it, and now Mason. "Sorry. No saving me tonight. If I get caught..." "Lissa's orders." I shut up and let him smuggle me out of the building. He took me over to the Moroi dorm and miraculously got me in and up to a room unseen. I wondered if there was a distracting bathroom fire in this building, too. Inside her room, I found a party in full swing. Lissa, Camille, Carly, Aaron, and a few other royals sat around laughing, listening to loud music, and passing around bottles of whiskey. No Mia, no Jesse. Natalie, I noticed a few moments later, sat apart from the group, clearly unsure how to act around all of them. Her awkwardness was totally obvious. Lissa stumbled to her feet, the fuzzy feelings in our bond indicating that she'd been drinking for a while.
"Rose!"
She turned to Mason with a dazzling smile.
"You delivered."
He swept her an over-the-top bow.
"I'm at your command."
I hoped he'd done it for the thrill of it, and not because of any compulsion. Lissa slung an arm around my waist and pulled me down with the others.
"Join the festivities."
"What are we celebrating?"
"I don't know. Your escape tonight?"
A few of the others held up plastic cups, cheering and toasting me. Xander Badika poured two more cups, handing them to Mason and me. I took mine with a smile, all the while feeling uneasy about the night's turn of events. Not so long ago, I would have welcomed a party like this and would have downed my drink in 30 seconds. Too much bothered me this time, though. Like the fact that the royals were treating Lissa like a goddess. Like how none of them seemed to remember that I'd been accused of being a blood whore. Like how Lissa was completely unhappy despite her smiles and laughter. "Where'd you get the whiskey?" I asked.
"Mr. Nagy," Aaron said.
He sat very close to Lissa. Everyone knew Mr. Nagy drank all the time after school and kept a stash on campus. He continually used new hiding places, and students continually found them. Lissa leaned against Aaron's shoulder.
"Aaron helped me break into his room and take them. He had them hidden in the bottom of the paint closet."
The others laughed, and Aaron gazed at her with complete and utter worship. Amusingly, I realized she hadn't had to use any compulsion on him. He was just that crazy for her. He always had been.
"Why aren't you drinking?" Mason asked me a little while later, speaking quietly into my ear.
I glanced down at my cup, half surprised to see it full. "I don't know. I guess I don't think guardians should drink around their charges."
"She's not your charge yet. You aren't on duty. You won't be for a long time. Since when did you get so responsible?"
I didn't really think I was all that responsible. But I was thinking about what Dimitri had said about balancing fun and obligation. It just seemed wrong to let myself go wild when Lissa was in such a vulnerable state lately. Wiggling out of my tight spot between her and Mason, I walked over and sat beside Natalie. "Hey, Nat, you're quiet tonight." She held a cup as full as mine.
"So are you."
I laughed softly. "I guess so." She tilted her head, watching Mason and the royals like they were some sort of science experiment. They'd consumed a lot more whiskey since I'd arrived, and the silliness had shot up considerably.
"Weird, huh? You used to be the center of attention. Now she is."
I blinked in surprise. I hadn't considered it like that. I guess so.
Hey, Rose, said Xander, nearly spilling his drink as he walked over to me. What was it like?
What was what like?
Letting someone feed off you.
The others fell quiet, a sort of anticipation settling over them.
She didn't do that, said Lissa in a warning voice. I told you.
Yeah, yeah, I know nothing happened with Jesse and Ralph. But you guys did it, right? While you were gone.
Let it go, said Lissa.
Compulsion worked best with direct eye contact, and his attention was focused on me, not her.
I mean, it's cool and everything. You guys did what you had to do, right? It's not like you're a feeder. I just want to know what it was like. Danielle Slesky let me bite her once. She said it didn't feel like anything.
There was a collective ew from among the girls. Sex and blood with vampires was dirty. Between Moroi, it was cannibalistic.
You are such a liar, said Camille.
No, I'm serious. It was just a small bite. She didn't get high like the feeders. Did you?
He put his free arm around my shoulder.
Did you like it?
Lissa's face went still and pale. Alcohol muted the full force of her feelings, but I could read enough to know how she felt. Dark, scared thoughts trickled into me, underscored with anger. She usually had a good grip on her temper, unlike me, but I'd seen it flare up before. Once it had happened at a party very similar to this one, just a few weeks after Ms. Karp had been taken away. Greg Dashkoff, a distant cousin of Natalie's, had held the party in his room. His parents apparently knew someone who knew someone, because he had one of the biggest rooms in the dorm. He'd been friends with Lissa's brother before the accident, and had been more than happy to take Andre's little sister into his social fold. Greg had also been happy to take me in, and the two of us had been all over each other that night. For a sophomore like me, being with a Royal Moroi senior was a huge rush. I drank a lot that night, but still managed to keep an eye on Lissa. She always wore an edge of anxiety around this many people, but no one really noticed, because she could interact with them so well. My heavy buzz kept a lot of her feelings from me, but as long as she looked okay, I didn't worry. Mid-kiss, Greg suddenly broke away and looked at something over my shoulder. We both sat in the same chair with me on his lap, and I craned my neck to see. What is it? He shook his head with a sort of amused exasperation.
Wade brought a feeder.
I followed his gaze to where Wade Voda stood with his arm around a frail girl about my age. She was human, and pretty, with wavy blonde hair and porcelain skin, pale from so much blood loss. A few other guys had homed in on her and stood with Wade, laughing and touching her face and hair. She's already fed too much today, I said, observing her coloring and complete look of confusion. Greg slid his hand behind my neck and turned me back to him.
They won't hurt her.
We kissed a while longer, and then I felt a tap on my shoulder.
Rose.
I looked up into Lissa's face. Her anxious expression startled me, because I couldn't feel the emotions behind it. Too much beer for me. I climbed off Greg's lap.
Where are you going?
He asked. Be right back. I pulled Lissa aside, suddenly wishing I was sober.
What's wrong? Them.
She nodded toward the guys with the feeder girl. She still had a group around her, and when she shifted to look at one of them, I saw small red wounds scattered on her neck. They were doing a sort of group feeding, taking turns biting her and making gross suggestions. High and oblivious, she let them.
They can't do that, Lissa told me.
She's a feeder. Nobody's going to stop them. Lissa looked up at me with pleading eyes. Hurt, outrage, and anger filled them.
Will you?
I'd always been the aggressive one, looking after her ever since we were little. Seeing her there now, so upset and looking at me to fix things, was more than I could stand. Giving her a shaky nod, I stumbled over to the group. You so desperate to get some that you've got to drug girls now, Wade? I asked.
He glanced up from where he'd been running his lips over the human girl's neck.
Why? Are you done with Greg and looking for more?
I put my hands on my hips and hoped I looked fierce. The truth was, I was actually starting to feel a little nauseous from all I'd drunk. I had enough of drugs in the world to get me near you, I told him. A few of his friends laughed.
But maybe you can go make out with that lamp over there. It seems to be out of it enough to make even you happy. You don't need her anymore.
A few other people laughed.
This isn't any of your business, he hissed. She's just lunch.
Referring to feeders as meals was about the only thing worse than calling vampires blood whores. This isn't a feeding room. Nobody wants to see this.
Yeah, agreed a senior girl. It's gross.
A few of her friends agreed. Wade glared at all of us, me the hardest.
Fine. None of you have to see it. Come on.
He grabbed the feeder girl's arm and jerked her away. Clumsily, she stumbled along with him out of the room, making soft whimpering noises.
Best I could do, I told Lissa.
She stared at me, shocked.
He's just going to take her to his room. He'll do even worse things to her.
Liss, I don't like it either, but it's not like I can go chase him down or anything.
I rubbed my forehead.
I could go punch him or something, but I feel like I'm going to throw up as it is.
Her face grew dark, and she bit her lip.
He can't do that.
I'm sorry.
I returned to the chair with Greg, feeling a little bad about what had happened. I didn't want to see the feeder get taken advantage of any more than Lissa did. It reminded me too much of what a lot of Moroi guys thought they could do with vampire girls. But I also couldn't win this battle, not tonight. Greg had shifted me around to get a better angle on my neck, when I noticed Lissa was gone a few minutes later. Practically falling, I clambered off his lap and looked around.
Where's Lissa?
He reached for me.
Probably the bathroom.
I couldn't feel a thing through the bond. The alcohol had numbed it. Stepping out into the hallway, I breathed a sigh of relief at escaping the loud music and voices. It was quiet out here, except for a crashing sound a couple rooms down. The door was ajar, and I pushed my way inside. The feeder girl cowered in a corner, terrified. Lissa stood with arms crossed, her face angry and terrible. She was staring at Wade intently, and he stared back, enchanted. He also held a baseball bat, and it looked like he'd used it already, because the room was trashed. Bookshelves, the stereo, the mirror?
Break the window, too, Lissa told him smoothly. Come on, it doesn't matter.
Hypnotized, he walked over to the large tinted window. I stared, my mouth nearly hitting the floor, as he pulled back and slammed the bat into the glass. It shattered, sending shards everywhere and letting in the early morning light it normally kept blocked out. He winced as it shone in his eyes, but he didn't move away.
Lissa, I exclaimed.
Stop it, make him stop.
He should have stopped earlier.
I barely recognized the look on her face. I'd never seen her so upset, and I'd certainly never seen her do anything like this. I knew what it was, of course. I knew right away. Compulsion. For all I knew, she was seconds away from having him turn the bat on himself.
Please, Lissa, don't do it anymore, please.
Through the fuzzy alcoholic buzz, I felt a trickle of her emotions. They were strong enough to practically knock me over. Black, angry, merciless, startling feelings to be coming from sweet and steady Lissa. I'd known her since kindergarten, but in that moment, I barely knew her, and I was afraid.
Please, Lissa, I repeated. He's not worth it. Let him go.
She didn't look at me. Her stormy eyes were focused entirely on Wade. Slowly, carefully, he lifted up the bat, tilting it so it lined up with his own skull.
Liss, I begged.
Oh, God, I was going to have to tackle her or something to make her stop.
Don't. Do it.
He should have stopped, Lissa said evenly.
The bat quit moving. It was now at exactly the right distance to gain momentum and strike.
He shouldn't have done that to her. People can't treat other people like that, even feeders.
But you're scaring her, I said softly. Look at her. Nothing happened at first. Then Lissa let her gaze flick toward the feeder. The human girl still sat huddled in a corner, arms wrapped around herself protectively. Her blue eyes were enormous, and light reflected off her wet, tear-streaked face. She gave a choked, terrified sob. Lissa's face stayed impassive. Inside her, I could feel the battle she was waging for control. Some part of her didn't want to hurt Wade, despite the blinding anger that otherwise filled her. Her face crumpled, and she squeezed her eyes shut. Her right hand reached out to her left wrist and clenched it, nails digging deep into the flesh. She flinched at the pain, but through the bond, I felt the shock of the pain distract her from Wade. She let go of the compulsion, and he dropped the bat, suddenly looking confused. I let go of the breath I'd been holding. In the hallway, footsteps sounded. I'd left the door open, and the crash had attracted attention. A couple of dorm staff members burst into the room, freezing when they saw the destruction in front of them. What happened? The rest of us looked at each other. Wade looked completely lost. He stared at the room, at the bat, and then at Lissa and me.
I don't know. I can't...
He turned his full attention to me and suddenly grew angry.
What the... It was you! You wouldn't let the feeder thing go!
The dorm workers looked at me questioningly, and in a few seconds, I made up my mind. You have to protect her. The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here. I could see Miss Karp's face in my mind, pleading frantically. I gave Wade a haughty look, knowing full well no one would question a confession I made, or even suspect Lissa. Yeah, well, if you'd let her go, I told him, I wouldn't have had to do this. Save her. Save her from herself. After that night, I never drank again. I refused to let my guard down around Lissa, and 2 days later, while I was supposed to be suspended for destruction of property, I took Lissa and broke out of the academy. Back in Lissa's room with Xander's arm around me and her angry and upset eyes on us, I didn't know if she'd do anything drastic again. But the situation reminded me too much of that one from 2 years ago, and I knew I had to defuse it.
Just a little blood, Xander was saying. I won't take much. I just want to see what Dampire tastes like. Nobody here cares.
Xander, growled Lissa. Leave her alone.
I slipped out from under his arm and smiled, looking for a funny retort rather than one that might start a fight. Come on, I teased. I had to hit the last guy who asked me that, and you're a hell of a lot prettier than Jesse. It'd be a waste.
Pretty? He asked. I'm stunningly sexy, but not pretty.
Carly laughed.
No, you're pretty. Todd told me you buy some kind of French hair gel.
Xander, distracted as so many drunk people easily are, turned around to defend his honor, forgetting me. The tension disappeared, and he took the teasing about his hair with a good attitude. Across the room, Lissa met my eyes with relief. She smiled and gave me a small nod of thanks before she returned her attention to Aaron. Chapter 16. The next day, it fully hit me how much things had changed since the Jesse and Ralph rumors first started. For some people, I remained a non-stop source of whispers and laughter. From Lissa's converts, I received friendliness and occasional defense. Overall, I realized, our classmates actually gave me very little of their attention anymore. This became especially true when something new distracted everyone. Lissa and Aaron. Apparently, Mia had found out about the party and had blown up when she heard that Aaron had been there without her. She'd bitched at him and told him that if he wanted to be with her, he couldn't run around and hang out with Lissa. So Aaron had decided he didn't want to be with her. He'd broken up with her that morning and moved on. Now he and Lissa were all over each other. They stood around in the hall and at lunch, arms wrapped around one another, laughing and talking. Lissa's bond feeling showed only mild interest, despite her gazing at him as though he was the most fascinating thing on the planet. Most of this was for show, unbeknownst to him. He looked as though he could have built a shrine at her feet at any moment. And me? I felt ill. My feelings were nothing, however, compared to Mia's. At lunch, she sat on the far side of the room from us, eyes fixed pointedly ahead, ignoring the consolations of the friends near her. She had blotchy pink patches on her pale round cheeks, and her eyes were red-rimmed. She said nothing mean when I walked past. No smug jokes, no mocking glares. Lissa had destroyed her, just as Mia had vowed to do to us. The only person more miserable than Mia was Christian. Unlike her, he had no qualms about studying the happy couple while wearing an open look of hatred on his face. As usual, no one except me even noticed. After watching Lissa and Aaron make out for the 10th time, I left lunch early and went to see Ms. Carmack, the teacher who taught elemental basics. I'd been wanting to ask her something for a while.
Rose, right?
She seemed surprised to see me, but not angry or annoyed like half the other teachers did lately. Yeah. I have a question about, magic. She raised an eyebrow. Novices didn't take magic classes.
Sure. What do you want to know?
I was listening to the priest talk about St. Vladimir the other day. Do you know what element he specialized in? Vladimir, I mean, not the priest. She frowned.
Odd. As famous as he is around here, I'm surprised it never comes up. I'm no expert, but in all the stories I've heard, he never did anything that I'd say connects to any one of the elements. Either that or no one ever recorded it.
What about his healings? I pushed further. Is there an element that lets you perform those?
No, not that I know of.
Her lips quirked into a small smile.
People of faith would say he healed through the power of God, not any sort of elemental magic. After all, one thing the stories are certain about is that he was full of spirit.
Is it possible he didn't specialize? Her smile faded.
Rose, is this really about St. Vladimir? Or is it about Lissa?
Not exactly, I stammered.
I know it's hard on her, especially in front of all of her classmates. But she has to be patient, she explained gently. It will happen. It always happens.
But sometimes it doesn't.
Rarely. But I don't think she'll be one of those. She's got a higher-than-average aptitude in all four, even if she hasn't hit specialized levels. One of them will shoot up any day now.
That gave me an idea. Is it possible to specialize in more than one element? She laughed and shook her head.
No. Too much power. No one could handle all that magic, not without losing her mind.
Oh, great. Okay, thanks. I started to leave, then thought of something else. Hey, do you remember Miss Carp? What did she specialize in? Miss Carmack got that uncomfortable look other teachers did when anyone mentioned Miss Carp.
Actually,
what?
I almost forgot. I think she really was one of the rare ones who never specialized. She just always kept a very low control over all four.
I spent the rest of my afternoon classes thinking about Ms. Carmack's words, trying to work them into my unified Lissa-Carp-Vladimir theory. I also watched Lissa. So many people wanted to talk to her now that she barely noticed my silence. Every so often, though, I'd see her glance at me and smile, a tired look in her eyes. Laughing and gossiping all day with people she only sort of liked was taking its toll on her. The mission's accomplished, I told her after school. We can stop Project Brainwash. We sat on benches in the courtyard, and she swung her legs back and forth.
What do you mean?
You've done it. You've stopped people from making my life horrible. You destroyed Mia. You stole Aaron. Play with him for another couple weeks, then drop him and the other royals. You'll be happier.
You don't think I'm happy now?
I know you aren't. Some of the parties are fun, but you hate pretending to be friends with people you don't like. And you don't like most of them. I know how much Xander pissed you off the other night.
He's a jerk. But I can deal with that. If I stop hanging out with them, everything will go back the way it was. Mia will just start up again. This way she can't bother us.
It's not worth it if everything else is bothering you.
Nothing's bothering me.
She sounded a little defensive. Yeah? I asked meanly. Because you're so in love with Aaron? Because you can't wait to have sex with him again? She glared at me.
Have I mentioned you can be a huge bitch sometimes?
I ignored that. I'm just saying you've got enough shit to worry about without all this. You're burning yourself out with all the compulsion you're using.
Rose!
She glanced anxiously around.
Be quiet!
But it's true. Using it all the time is going to screw with your head, for real.
Don't you think you're getting carried away?
What about Ms. Karp? Lissa's expression went very still.
What about her?
You. You're just like her.
No, I'm not!
Outrage flashed in those green eyes. She healed, too. Hearing me talk about this shocked her. This topic had weighed us down for so long, but we'd almost never spoken about it.
That doesn't mean anything.
You don't think it does? Do you know anyone else who can do that? Or can use compulsion on vampires and Moroi?
She never used compulsion like that, she argued.
She did. She tried to use it on me the night she left. It started to work, but then they took her away before she finished. Or had they? After all, it was only a month later that Lissa and I had run away from the academy. I'd always thought that was my own idea, but maybe Miss Karp's suggestion had been the true force behind it. Lissa crossed her arms. Her face looked defiant, but her emotions felt uneasy.
Fine.
So what?
So she's a freak like me. That doesn't mean anything. She went crazy because... Well, that was just the way she was. That's got nothing to do with anything else.
But it's not just her, I said slowly. There's someone else like you guys, too. Someone I found. I hesitated. You know, Saint Vladimir? And that's when I finally let it all out. I told her everything. I told her about how she, Ms. Karp, and St. Vladimir could all heal and use super compulsion. Although it made her squirm, I told her how they too grew easily upset and had tried to hurt themselves. He tried to kill himself, I said, not meeting her eyes. And I used to notice marks on Ms. Karp's skin, like she'd claw at her own face. She tried to hide it with her hair, but I could see the old scratches and tell when she made new ones.
It doesn't mean anything, insisted Lissa. It's all a coincidence.
She sounded like she wanted to believe that, and inside, some part of her really did. But there was another part of her, a desperate part of her, that had wanted for so long to know that she wasn't a freak, that she wasn't alone. Even if the news was bad, at least now she knew there were others like her. Is it a coincidence that neither of them seems to have specialized? I recounted my conversation with Miss Carmack and explained my theory about specializing in all four elements. I also repeated Miss Carmack's comment about how that would burn someone out. Lissa rubbed her eyes when I finished, smudging a little of her makeup. She gave me a weak smile.
I don't know what's crazier. What you're actually telling me, or the fact that you actually read something to find all this out.
I grinned, relieved that she'd actually mustered a joke. Hey, I know how to read, too.
I know you do. I also know it took you a year to read the Da Vinci Code, she laughed.
That wasn't my fault, and don't try to change the subject.
I'm not.
She smiled, then sighed. I just don't know what to think about all this. There's nothing to think about. Just don't do stuff that'll upset you. Remember coasting through the middle? Go back to that. It's a lot easier on you. She shook her head.
I can't do that. Not yet.
Why not? I already told you. I stopped, wondering why I hadn't caught on before. It's not just Mia. You're doing all this because you feel like you're supposed to. You're still trying to be Andre.
My parents would have wanted me to...
Your parents would have wanted you to be happy.
It's not that easy, Rose. I can't ignore these people forever. I'm royal, too.
Most of them suck.
And a lot of them are going to help rule the Moroi. Andre knew that. He wasn't like the others, but he did what he had to do because he knew how important they were.
I leaned back against the bench. Well, maybe that's the problem. We're deciding who's important based on family alone, so we end up with these screwed-up people making decisions. That's why Moroi numbers are dropping, and bitches like Tatiana are queen. Maybe there needs to be a new royal system.
Come on, Rose. This is the way it is. That's the way it's been for centuries. We have to live with that.
I glared.
Okay, how about this? She continued. You're worried about me becoming like them, like Miss Carp and St. Vladimir, right? Well, she said I shouldn't use the powers, that it would make things get worse if I did. What if I just stop? Compulsion, healing everything.
I narrowed my eyes. You could do that? The convenient compulsion aside, that was what I'd wanted her to do the whole time. Her depression had started at the same time the powers emerged, just after the accident. I had to believe they were connected, particularly in light of the evidence and Ms. Karp's warnings.
Yes.
Her face was perfectly composed, her expression serious and steady. With her pale hair woven into a neat French braid and a suede blazer over her dress, she looked like she could have taken her family's place on the council right now. You'd have to give up everything, I warned. No healing, no matter how cute and cuddly the animal, and no more compulsion to dazzle the royals. She nodded seriously.
I can do it. Will that make you feel better?
Yeah, but I'd feel even better if you'd stop magic and went back to hanging out with Natalie.
I know. But I can't stop, not now at least.
I couldn't get her to budge on that, yet, but knowing that she would avoid using her powers relieved me. All right, I said, picking up my backpack. I was late for practice, again. You can keep playing with the Brat Pack, so long as you keep the other stuff in check. I hesitated. And you know, you really have made your point with Aaron and Mia. You don't have to keep him around to keep hanging out with the royals.
Why do I keep getting the feeling you don't like him anymore?
I like him okay, which is about as much as you like him. And I don't think you should get hot and sweaty with people you only like okay. Lissa widened her eyes in pretend astonishment.
Is this Rose Hathaway talking?
Have you reformed?
Or do you have someone you like more than okay?
Hey, I said uncomfortably. I'm just looking out for you. That, and I've never noticed how boring Aaron is before. She scoffed.
You think everyone's boring?
Christian isn't. It slipped out before I could stop it. She quit smiling.
He's a jerk. He just stopped talking to me for no reason one day.
She crossed her arms.
And don't you hate him anyway?
I can still hate him and think he's interesting. But I was also starting to think that I might have made a big mistake about Christian. He was creepy and dark and liked to set people on fire, true. On the other hand, he was smart and funny in a twisted way, and somehow had a calming effect on Lissa. But I'd messed it all up. I'd let my anger and jealousy get the best of me and ended up separating them. If I'd let him go to her in the garden that night, maybe she wouldn't have gotten upset and cut herself. Maybe they'd be together now, away from all the school politics.
Fate must have been thinking the same thing, because 5 minutes after I left Lissa, I passed Christian walking across the quad. Our eyes locked for a moment before we passed each other. I nearly kept walking. Nearly. Taking a deep breath, I came to a stop. "Wait, Christian," I called out to him. Damn, I was so late for training. Dimitri was going to kill me. Christian spun around to face me, hands stuffed in the pockets of his long black coat, his posture slumped and uncaring.
"Yeah?"
"Thanks for the books." He didn't say anything. "The ones you gave to Mason?"
"Oh, I thought you meant the other books."
Smartass. "Aren't you going to ask what they were for?"
"Your business. Just figured you were bored being suspended."
"I'd have to be pretty bored for that." He didn't laugh at my joke.
"What do you want, Rose? I've got places to be."
I knew he was lying, but my sarcasm no longer seemed as funny as usual. "I want you to, hang out with Lissa again."
"Are you serious?"
He studied me closely, suspicion all over him.
"After what you said to me?"
"Yeah, well, didn't Mason tell you?" Christian's lips turned up into a sneer.
"He told me something."
"And?"
"And I don't want to hear it from Mason."
His sneer cranked up when I glared.
"You sent him to apologize for you. Step up and do it yourself."
"You're a jerk," I informed him.
"Yeah, and you're a liar. I want to see you eat your pride."
"I've been eating my pride for 2 weeks," I growled. Shrugging, he turned around and started to walk away. "Wait," I called, putting my hand on his shoulder. He stopped and looked back at me. "All right, all right. I lied about how she felt. She never said any of that stuff about you, okay? She likes you. I made it up because I don't like you."
"And yet you want me to talk to her?"
When the next words left my lips, I could barely believe it. "I think you might be good for her." We stared at each other for several heavy moments. His smirk dried up a little. Not much surprised him. This did.
"I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Can you repeat that?" he finally asked.
I almost punched him in the face. "Will you stop it already? I want you to hang out with her again."
"No."
"Look, I told you, I lied."
"It's not that. It's her. You think I can talk to her now? She's Princess Lissa again."
Venom dripped off his words.
"I can't go near her, not when she's surrounded by all those royals."
"You're royal too," I said, more to myself than him. I kept forgetting the Ozeras were one of the 12 families.
"Doesn't mean much in a family full of Strigoi, huh?"
"But you're not... Wait. That's why she connects to you," I realized with a start.
"Because I'm going to become a Strigoi?"
he asked snidely. "No. Because you lost your parents, too. Both of you saw them die."
"She saw hers die. I saw mine murdered."
I flinched. "I know. I'm sorry. It must have been... Well, I don't have any idea what it was like." Those crystal blue eyes went unfocused.
"It was like seeing an army of death invade my house."
"You mean your parents?"
He shook his head. "The guardians who came to kill them. I mean, my parents were scary, yeah, but they still looked like my parents. A little paler, I guess. Some red in their eyes. But they walked and talked the same way. I didn't know anything was wrong with them, but my aunt did. She was watching me when they came for me."
"Were they going to convert you?" I'd forgotten my original mission here, too caught up in the story. "You were really little."
"I think they were going to keep me until I was older, then turn me. Aunt Tasha wouldn't let them take me. They tried to reason with her, convert her too, but when she wouldn't listen, they tried to take her by force. She fought them, got really messed up, and then the guardians showed up."
His eyes drifted back to me. He smiled, but there was no happiness in it.
Like I said, an army of death. I think you're crazy, Rose, but if you turn out like the rest of them, you're going to be able to do some serious damage one day. Even I won't mess with you.
I felt horrible. He'd had a miserable life, and I'd taken away one of the few good things in it. Christian, I'm sorry for screwing things up between you and Lissa. It was stupid. She wanted to be with you. I think she still does now. If you could just...
I told you, I can't.
I'm worried about her. She's into all this royal stuff because she thinks it's going to get back at Mia. She's doing it for me.
And you aren't grateful?
The sarcasm returned. I'm worried. She can't handle playing all these catty political games. It isn't good for her. But she won't listen to me. I could use some help.
She could use some help. Hey, don't look so surprised. I know there's something funny going on with her. And I'm not even talking about the wrist thing.
I jumped. Did she tell you? Why not? She told him everything else.
She didn't need to, he said. I've got eyes.
I must have looked pathetic, because he sighed and ran a hand through his hair.
Look, if I catch Lissa alone, I'll try to talk to her. But honestly, if you really want to help her, well, I know I'm supposed to be all anti-establishment, but you might get the best help talking to somebody else. Karova, your guardian guy, I don't know. Someone who knows something. Someone you trust.
Lissa wouldn't like that, I considered. Neither would I.
Yeah, well, we all have to do things we don't like. That's life.
My snarky switch flipped on. What are you, an after-school special? A ghostly smile flickered across his face.
If you weren't so psychotic, you'd be fun to hang around.
Funny, I feel that way about you, too. He didn't say anything else, but the smile grew, and he walked away. Chapter 17. A few days later, Lissa found me outside the commons and delivered the most astonishing news.
Uncle Victor's getting Natalie off campus this weekend to go shopping in Missoula for the dance. They said I could come along.
I didn't say anything. She looked surprised at my silence.
Isn't that cool?
For you, I guess. No malls or dances in my future. She smiled excitedly.
He told Natalie she could bring two other people besides me. I convinced her to bring you and Camille.
I threw up my hands. Well, thanks, but I'm not even supposed to go to the library after school. No one's going to let me go to Missoula.
Uncle Victor thinks he can get Headmistress Kirova to let you go. Dimitri's trying, too.
Dimitri?
Yeah. He has to go with me if I leave campus.
She grinned, taking my interest in Dimitri as interest in the mall.
They figured out my account, finally. I got my allowance back. So we can buy other stuff along with dresses. And you know if they let you go to the mall, they have to let you go to the dance.
Do we go to dances now? I said. We never had before. School-sponsored social events? No way.
Of course not. But you know there'll be all kinds of secret parties. We'll start at the dance and sneak off.
She sighed happily.
Mia's so jealous she can barely stand it.
She went on and on about the stores we'd go to, all the things we'd buy. I admit, I was kind of excited at the thought of getting some new clothes, but I doubted I'd actually get this mythical release.
Oh, hey, she said excitedly. You should see these shoes Camille let me borrow. I never knew we wore the same size. Hang on.
She opened her backpack and began riffling through it. Suddenly, she screamed and threw it down. Books and shoes spilled out. So did a dead dove. It was one of the pale brown mourning doves that sat on wires along the freeway and under trees on campus. It had so much blood on it that I couldn't figure out where the wound was. Who knew something so small even had that much blood? Regardless, The bird was definitely dead. Covering her mouth, Lissa stared wordlessly, eyes wide. "Son of a bitch," I swore. Without hesitating, I grabbed a stick and pushed the little feathered body aside. When it was out of the way, I started shoving her stuff back into the backpack, trying not to think about dead bird germs. "Why the hell does this keep... Liss!" I leapt over and grabbed her, pulling her away. She had been kneeling on the ground, with her hand outstretched to the dove. I don't think she even realized what she was about to do. The instinct in her was so strong, it acted on its own. "Lissa," I said, tightening my hand around hers. She was still leaning toward the bird. "Don't. Don't do it."
"I can save it."
"No, you can't. You promised, remember? Some things have to stay dead. Let this one go." Still feeling her tension, I pleaded.
"Please, Liss.
You promised. No more healings. You said you wouldn't. You promised me." After a few more moments, I felt her hand relax and her body slump against mine.
"I hate this, Rose. I hate all of this."
Natalie walked outside then, oblivious to the gruesome sight awaiting her.
"Hey, do you guys... Oh, my God!"
She squealed, seeing the dove.
"What is that?"
I helped Lissa as we rose to our feet. "Another, prank."
"Is it dead?"
She scrunched up her face in disgust. "Yes," I said firmly. Natalie, picking up on our tension, looked between the two of us.
"What else is wrong?"
"Nothing." I handed Lissa her backpack. "This is just someone's stupid, sick joke, and I'm going to tell Kirova so they can clean this up." Natalie turned away, looking a little green.
"Why do people keep doing this to you? It's horrible."
Lissa and I exchanged looks. "I have no idea," I said. Yet as I walked to Kirova's office, I started to wonder. When we'd found the fox, Lissa had hinted that someone must know about the raven. I hadn't believed that. We'd been alone in the woods that night, and Ms. Karp wouldn't have told anyone. But what if someone actually had seen? What if someone kept doing this not to scare her, but to see if she'd heal again? What had that rabbit note said? "I know what you are." I didn't mention any of this to Lissa. I figured there were only so many of my conspiracy theories she could handle. Besides, when I saw her the next day, she'd practically forgotten the dove in light of other news. Kirova had given me permission to go on the trip that weekend. The prospect of shopping can brighten a lot of dark situations, even animal murder, and I put my own worries on hold. Only when the time came, I discovered my release came with strings attached.
"Headmistress Kirova thinks you've done well since coming back,"
Dmitri told me. "Aside from starting a fight in Mr. Nagy's class?"
"She doesn't blame you for that. Not entirely. I convinced her you needed a break, and that you could use this as a training exercise."
"Training exercise?" He gave me a brief explanation as we walked out to meet the others going with us. Victor Dashkov, as sickly as ever, was there with his guardians, and Natalie practically barreled into him. He smiled and gave her a careful hug, one that ended when a coughing fit took over. Natalie's eyes went wide with concern as she waited for it to pass. He claimed he was fine to accompany us, and while I admired his resolve, I thought he'd been putting himself through a lot just to shop with a bunch of teenage girls. We rode out the 2-hour trip to Missoula in a large school van, leaving just after sunrise. Many Moroi lived separately from humans, but many also lived among them, and when shopping at their malls, you had to go during their hours. The back windows of the van had tinted glass to filter the light and keep the worst of it away from the vampires. We had 9 people in our group: Lissa, Victor, Natalie, Camille, Dmitri, me, and 3 other guardians. 2 of the guardians, Ben and Spiridon, always traveled with Victor. The 3rd was one of the school's guardians, Stan, the jerk who'd humiliated me on my first day back.
Camille and Natalie don't have personal guardians yet, Dimitri explained to me. They're both under the protection of their family's guardians. Since they are academy students leaving campus, a school guardian accompanies them, Sten. I go because I'm Lisa's assigned guardian. Most girls her age wouldn't have a personal guardian yet, but circumstances make her unusual.
I sat in the back of the van with him and Spiridon so they could dispense guardian wisdom to me as part of the training exercise. Ben and Stan sat up front, while the others sat in the middle. Lissa and Victor talked to each other a lot, catching up on news. Camille raised to be polite among older royals, smiled and nodded along. Natalie, on the other hand, looked left out and kept trying to shift her father's attention from Lissa. It didn't work. He'd apparently learned to tune out her chatter. I turned back to Dimitri. She's supposed to have two guardians. Princes and princesses always do. Spiridon was Dimitri's age, with spiky blonde hair and a more casual attitude. Despite his Greek name, he had a southern drawl.
Don't worry, she'll have plenty when the time comes. Dimitri's already one of them. Odds are you'll be one too. And that's why you're here today.
The training part, I guessed.
Yup. You're gonna be Dimitri's partner.
A moment of funny silence fell. Probably not noticeable to anyone except Dimitri and me. Our eyes met.
Guarding partner, Dimitri clarified unnecessarily,
like maybe he too had been thinking of other kinds of partners.
Yup,
agreed Spiridon. Oblivious to the tension around him, he went on to explain how guardian pairs worked. It was standard stuff, straight from my textbooks, but it meant more now that I'd be doing it in the real world. Guardians were assigned to Moroi based on importance. Two was a common grouping, one I'd probably work in a lot with Lissa. One guardian stayed close to the target. The other stood back and kept an eye on the surroundings. Boringly, those holding these positions were called near and far guards.
You'll probably always be near guard, Dimitri told me. You're female and the same age as the princess. You can stay close to her without attracting any attention.
And I can't ever take my eyes off her, I noted, or you. Spiridon laughed again and elbowed Dimitri.
You've got a star student there.
Did you give her a steak?
No, she's not ready.
I would be if someone would show me how to use one, I argued. I knew every guardian in the van had a stake and a gun concealed on him.
More to it than just using the stake, said Dimitri in his old and wise way. You've still got to subdue them, and you've got to bring yourself to kill them.
Why wouldn't I kill them?
Most Rigoi used to be Moroi who purposely turned. Sometimes they're Moroi or vampires turn by force. It doesn't matter. There's a strong chance you might know one of them. Could you kill someone you used to know?
This trip was getting less fun by the minute. I guess so. I'd have to, right? If it's them or Lissa.
You might still hesitate, said Dimitri. And that hesitation could kill you. And her.
Then how do you make sure you don't hesitate?
You have to keep telling yourself that they aren't the same people you knew. They've become something dark and twisted, something unnatural. You have to let go of attachments and do what's right. If they have any grain of their former selves left, they'll probably be grateful.
Grateful for me killing them?
If someone turned you into a Strigoi, what would you want? He asked.
I didn't know how to answer that, so I said nothing. Never taking his eyes off me, he kept pushing.
What would you want if you knew you were going to be converted into a Strigoi against your will? If you knew you would lose all sense of your old morals and understanding of what's right and wrong? If you knew you'd live the rest of your life, your immortal life, killing innocent people, What would you want?
The van had grown uncomfortably silent. Staring at Dimitri, burdened by all those questions, I suddenly understood why he and I had this weird attraction, good looks aside. I'd never met anyone else who took being a guardian so seriously, who understand all the life and death consequences. Certainly no one my age did yet. Mason hadn't been able to understand why I couldn't relax and drink at the party. Dimitri said I grasped my duty better than many older guardians, and I didn't get why, especially when they would have seen so much more death and danger. But I knew in that moment that he was right, that I had some weird sense of how life and death and good and evil worked with each other. So did he. We might get lonely sometimes. We might have to put our fun on hold. We might not be able to live the lives we wanted for ourselves. But that was the way it had to be. We understood each other, understood that we had others to protect. Our lives would never be easy. And making decisions like this one was part of that. If I became Strigoi, I'd want someone to kill me.
So would I,
he said quietly. I could tell he'd had the same flash of realization I'd just had, that same sense of connection between us.
It reminds me of Mikhail hunting Sonya,
murmured Victor thoughtfully.
Who are Mikhail and Sonya? Asked Lissa.
Victor looked surprised.
Why, I thought you knew. Sonya Karp?
Sonya Karp? You mean Miss Karp? What about her?
She looked back and forth between me and her uncle. She became Strigoi, I said, not meeting Lissa's eyes. By choice. I'd known Lissa would find out someday. It was the final piece of Ms. Karp's saga, a secret I'd kept to myself. A secret that worried me constantly. Lissa's face and bond registered complete and utter shock, growing in intensity when she realized I'd known and never told. But I don't know who Mikhail is, I added.
Mikhail Tanner, said Spyridon.
Oh, Guardian Tanner. He was here before we left. I frowned. Why is he chasing Ms. Karp?
To kill her, said Dimitri flatly. They were lovers.
The entire Strigoi thing shifted into new focus for me. Running into a Strigoi I knew during the heat of battle was one thing. Purposely hunting down someone I'd loved. Well, I didn't know if I could do that, even if it was technically the right thing.
Perhaps it is time to talk about something else, said Victor gently. Today isn't a day to dwell on depressing topics.
I think all of us felt relieved to get to the mall. Shifting into my bodyguard role, I stuck by Lissa's side as we wandered from store to store, looking at all the new styles that were out there. It was nice to be in public again, and to do something with her that was just fun and didn't involve any of the dark, twisted politics of the academy. It was almost like old times. I'd missed just hanging out. I'd missed my best friend. Although it was only just past mid-November, the mall already had glittering holiday decorations up. I decided I had the best job ever. Admittedly, I did feel a little put out when I realized the older guardians got to stay in contact through cool little communication devices. When I protested my lack of one, Dimitri told me I'd learn better without one. If I could handle protecting Lissa the old-fashioned way, I could handle anything. Victor and Spyridon stayed with us while Dimitri and Ben fanned out, somehow managing not to look like creepy stalker guys watching teenage girls.
This is so you, said Lissa in Macy's, handing me a low-cut tank top embellished with lace. I'll buy it for you.
I regarded it longingly, already picturing myself in it. Then, making my regular eye contact with Dimitri, I shook my head and handed it back. Winter's coming, I'd get cold.
Never stopped you before.
Shrugging, she hung it back up. She and Camille tried on a non-stop string of clothes, their massive allowances ensuring that price posed no problem. Lissa offered to buy me anything I wanted. We'd been generous with each other our whole lives, and I didn't hesitate to take her up on it. My choices surprised her.
You've got 3 thermal shirts and a hoodie, she informed me, flipping through the stack of BCBG jeans. You've gone all boring on me.
Hey, I don't see you buying slutty tops.
I'm not the one who wears them.
Thanks a lot.
You know what I mean. You're even wearing your hair up.
It was true. I'd taken Dimitri's advice and wrapped my hair up in a high bun, earning a smile when he'd seen me. If I'd had Molnia marks, they would have shown. Glancing around, she made sure none of the others could hear us. The feelings in the bond shifted to something more troubled.
You knew about Miss Karp.
Yeah, I heard about it a month or so after she left. Lissa tossed a pair of embroidered jeans over her arm, not looking at me.
Why didn't you tell me?
You didn't need to know.
You didn't think I could handle it?
I kept my face perfectly blank. As I stared at her, my mind was back in time, back to 2 years ago. I'd been on day 2 of my suspension for allegedly destroying Wade's room when a royal party visited the school. I'd been allowed to attend that reception, too, but had been under heavy guard to make sure I didn't try anything. 2 guardians escorted me to the commons and talked quietly with each other along the way.
She killed the doctor attending her and nearly took out half the patients and nurses on her way out.
Do they have any idea where she went?
No. They're tracking her. But, well, you know how it is.
I never expected her to do this. She never seemed like the type.
Yeah, well, Sonia was crazy. Did you see how violent she was getting near the end? She was capable of anything.
I'd been trudging along miserably and jerked my head up. Sonia? You mean Miss Karp? I asked. She killed somebody? The 2 guardians exchanged looks. Finally, one said gravely,
She became a Strigoi, Rose.
I stopped walking and stared. Miss Karp? No, she wouldn't have...
I'm afraid so, the other one replied. But you should keep that to yourself. It's a tragedy. Don't make it school gossip.
I went through the rest of the night in a daze. Miss Karp. Crazy Karp. She'd killed someone to become Strigoi. I couldn't believe it. When the reception ended, I'd managed to sneak off from my guardians and steal a few precious moments with Lissa. The bond had grown strong by now, and I hadn't needed to see her face to know how miserable she was. What's wrong? I asked her. We were in a corner of the hallway, just outside the commons. Her eyes were blank. I could feel how she had a headache. Its pain transferred to me.
I don't know. I just feel weird. I feel like I'm being followed. Like I have to be careful, you know?
I didn't know what to say. I didn't think she was being followed, but Ms. Karp used to say the same thing. Always paranoid. It's probably nothing, I said lightly.
Probably,
she agreed. Her eyes suddenly narrowed.
But Wade isn't. He won't shut up about what happened. You can't believe the things he's saying about you.
I could, actually, but I didn't care. Forget about him, he's nothing.
I hate him, she said. Her voice was uncharacteristically sharp. I'm on the committee with him for that fundraiser, and I hate hearing him run his fat mouth every day and seeing him flirt with anything female that walks by. You shouldn't be punished for what he did. He needs to pay.
My mouth went dry. It's okay. I don't care. Calm down, Liz.
I care, she snapped, turning her anger on me. I wish there was a way I could get back at him. Some way to hurt him like he hurt you.
She put her hands behind her back and paced, back and forth, furiously, her steps hard and purposeful. The hatred and anger boiled within her. I could feel it in the bond. It felt like a storm, and it scared the hell out of me. Wrapped around it all was an uncertainty, an instability that said Lissa didn't know what to do, but that she wanted desperately to do something. Anything. My mind flashed to the night with the baseball bat, and then I thought about Miss Karp. She became a Strigoi, Rose. It was the scariest moment of my life, scarier than seeing her in Wade's room.
Scarier than seeing her heal that raven. Scarier than my capture by the Guardians would be. Because just then, I didn't know my best friend. I didn't know what she was capable of. A year earlier, I would have laughed at anyone who said she'd want to go Strigoi. But a year earlier, I also would have laughed at anyone who said she'd want to cut her wrists or make someone pay. In that moment, I suddenly believed she might do the impossible, and I had to make sure she didn't. Save her. Save her from herself. "We're leaving," I said, taking her arm and steering her down the hall. "Right now." Confusion momentarily replaced her anger.
"What do you mean? You want to go to the woods or something?"
I didn't answer. Something in my attitude or words must have startled her, because she didn't question me as I led us out of the commons, cutting across campus toward the parking lot where visitors came. It was filled with cars belonging to tonight's guests. One of them was a large Lincoln Town car, and I watched as its chauffeur started it up. "Someone's leaving early," I said, peering at him from around a cluster of bushes. I glanced behind us and saw nothing. "They'll probably be here any minute." Lissa caught on.
"When you said, 'we're leaving,' you meant..."
"No, Rose, we can't leave the academy. We'd never get through the wards and checkpoints."
"We don't have to," I said firmly. "He does."
"But how does that help us?"
I took a deep breath, regretting what I had to say but seeing it as the lesser of evils. "You know how you made Wade do those things?" She flinched but nodded. "I need you to do the same thing. Go up to that guy and tell him to hide us in his trunk." Shock and fear poured out of her. She didn't understand and she was scared, extremely scared. She'd been scared for weeks now, ever since the healing in the moods in Wade. She was fragile and on the edge of something neither of us understood. But through all of that, she trusted me. She believed I would keep her safe.
"Okay," she said.
She took a few steps toward him, then looked back at me.
"Why? Why are we doing this?"
I thought about Lissa's anger, her desire to do anything to get back at Wade. And I thought about Ms. Karp. Pretty, unstable Ms. Karp going Strigoi. "I'm taking care of you," I said. "You don't need to know anything else." At the mall in Missoula, standing between racks of designer clothes, Lissa asked again,
"Why didn't you tell me?"
"You didn't need to know," I repeated. She headed toward the dressing room, still whispering with me.
"You're worried I'm going to lose it. Are you worried I'll go Strigoi too?"
"No, no way. That was all her. You'd never do that."
"Even if I was crazy?"
"No," I said, trying to make a joke. "You'd just shave your head and live with 30 cats." Lissa's feelings grew darker, but she didn't say anything else. Stopping just outside the dressing room, she pulled a black dress off the rack. She brightened a little.
"This is the dress you were born for. I don't care how practical you are now."
Made of silky black material, the dress was strapless and sleek, falling about to the knees. Although it had a slight flare at the hemline, the rest looked like it would definitely manage some serious clinging action. Super sexy. Maybe even challenge the school dress code sexy. "That is my dress," I admitted. I kept staring at it, wanting it so badly that it ached in my chest. This was the kind of dress that changed the world. The kind of dress that started religions. Lissa pulled out my size.
"Try it on."
I shook my head and started to put it back. "I can't. It would compromise you. One dress isn't worth your grisly death."
"Then we'll just have to get it without you trying it on."
She bought the dress. The afternoon continued, and I found myself growing tired. Always watching and being on guard suddenly became a lot less fun. When we hit our last stop, a jewelry store, I felt kind of glad.
"Here you go," said Lissa, pointing at one of the cases. "The necklace made to go with your dress."
I looked. A thin gold chain with a gold and diamond rose pendant. Emphasis on the diamond part. I hate rose stuff. Lissa had always loved getting me rose things, just to see my reaction, I think. When she saw the necklace's price, her smile fell away. Oh, look at that. Even you have limits, I teased. Your crazy spending is stopped at last. We waited for Victor and Natalie to finish up. He was apparently buying her something, and she looked like she might grow wings and fly away with happiness. I was glad. She'd been dying for his attention. Hopefully he was buying her something extra expensive to make up for it. We rode home in tired silence, our sleep schedules all messed up by the daylight trip. Sitting next to Dimitri, I leaned back against the seat and yawned, very aware that our arms were touching. The feeling of closeness and connection burned between us. So, I can't ever try on clothes again? I asked quietly, not wanting to wake up the others. Victor and the guardians were awake, but the girls had fallen asleep.
When you aren't on duty, you can. You can do it during your time off.
I don't ever want time off. I want to always take care of Lissa. I yawned again. Did you see that dress?
I saw the dress.
Did you like it? He didn't answer. I took that as a yes. Am I going to endanger my reputation if I wear it to the dance? When he spoke, I could barely hear him.
You'll endanger the school.
I smiled and fell asleep. When I woke up, my head rested against his shoulder. That long coat of his, the duster, covered me like a blanket. The van had stopped. We were back at school. I pulled the duster off and climbed out after him, suddenly feeling wide awake and happy. Too bad my freedom was about to end. Back to prison, I sighed, walking beside Lissa toward the commons. Maybe if you fake a heart attack, I can make a break for it.
Without your clothes?
She handed me a bag, and I swung it around happily.
I can't wait to see the dress.
Me either, if they let me go. Kirova's still deciding if I've been good enough.
Show her those boring shirts you bought. She'll go into a coma.
I'm about ready to. I laughed and hopped up onto one of the wooden benches, pacing her as I walked along it. I jumped back down when I reached the end. They aren't that boring.
I don't know what to think of this new, responsible rose.
I hopped onto another bench. I'm not that responsible. Hey, called Spiridon. He and the rest of the group trailed behind us.
You're still on duty. No fun allowed up there.
No fun here, I called back, hearing the laughter in his voice. I swear, shit! I was up on a third bench, near the end of it. My muscles tensed, ready to jump back down. Only when I tried to, my foot didn't go with me. The wood, at one moment seemingly hard and solid, gave way beneath me, almost as though made of paper. It disintegrated. My foot went through, my ankle getting caught in the hole while the rest of my body tried to go in another direction. The bench held me, swinging my body to the ground while still seizing my foot. My ankle bent in an unnatural direction. I crashed down. I heard a cracking sound that wasn't the wood. The worst pain of my life shot through my body. And then I blacked out. Chapter 18. I woke up staring at the boring white ceiling of the clinic. A filtered light, soothing to Moroi patients, shone down on me. I felt strange, kind of disoriented, but I didn't hurt.
Rose.
The voice was like silk on my skin, gentle, rich. Turning my head, I met Dimitri's dark eyes. He sat in a chair beside the bed I lay on, his shoulder-length brown hair hanging forward and framing his face.
Hey, I said, my voice coming out as a croak. How do you feel?
Weird. Kind of groggy.
Dr. Olensky gave you something for the pain. You seemed pretty bad when we brought you in.
I don't remember that. How long have I been out?
A few hours.
Must have been strong.
must still be strong. Some of the details came back. The bench, my ankle getting caught. I couldn't remember much after that. Feeling hot and cold and then hot again. Tentatively, I tried moving the toes on my healthy foot. I don't hurt at all. He shook his head.
No, because you weren't seriously injured.
The sound of my ankle cracking came back to me. Are you sure? I remember the way it bent. No, something must be broken. I managed to sit up so I could look at my ankle. Or at least sprained. He moved forward to stop me.
Be careful. Your ankle might be fine, but you're probably still a little out of it.
I carefully shifted to the edge of the bed and looked down. My jeans were rolled up. The ankle looked a little red, but I had no bruises or serious marks. God, I got lucky. If I'd hurt it, it would have put me out of practice for a while. Smiling, he returned to his chair.
I know. You kept telling me that while I was carrying you. You were very upset.
You carried me here?
After we broke the bench apart and freed your foot.
Man, I'd missed out on a lot. The only thing better than imagining Dimitri carrying me in his arms was imagining him shirtless while carrying me in his arms. Then the reality of the situation hit me. I was taken down by a bench. I groaned.
What?
I survived the whole day guarding Lissa, and you guys said I did a good job. Then I get back here and meet my downfall in the form of a bench.
Ugh.
Do you know how embarrassing it is? And all those guys saw, too.
It wasn't your fault, he said. No one knew the bench was rotted. It looked fine.
Still, I should have just stuck to the sidewalk like a normal person. The other novices are going to give me shit when I get back. His lips held back a smile.
Maybe presents will cheer you up.
I sat up straighter.
Presents?
The smile escaped, and he handed me a small box with a piece of paper.
This is from Prince Victor.
Surprised that Victor would have given me anything, I read the note. It was just a few lines hastily scrawled in pen. Rose, I'm very happy to see you didn't suffer any serious injuries from your fall. Truly, it is a miracle. You lead a charmed life, and Vasilisa is lucky to have you. That's nice of him, I said, opening the box. Then I saw what was inside.
Whoa, very nice.
It was the rose necklace, the one Lissa had wanted to get me but couldn't afford. I held it up, looping its chain over my hand so the glittering, diamond-covered rose hung free. This is pretty extreme for a get-well present, I noted, recalling the price.
He actually bought it in honor of you doing so well on your first day as an official guardian. He saw you and Lissa looking at it.
Wow. It was all I could say. I don't think I did that good of a job.
I do.
Grinning, I placed the necklace back in the box and set it on a nearby table. You did say presents, right? Like, more than one? He laughed outright, and the sound wrapped around me like a caress. God, I loved the sound of his laugh.
This is from me.
He handed me a small plain bag. Puzzled and excited, I opened it up. Lip gloss, the kind I liked. I'd complained to him a number of times how I was